Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 11, 2020. Corrupt South Sudanese officials will soon find it very hard to send money to UK.
What it does is it alerts companies to look out for the South Sudanese politically exposed persons who may be engaged in corruption and human rights abuses in South Sudan, and also those who enable such activities may be using the UK financial system.
And some Catholic faithfuls continue their protest against the appointment of a new archbishop for Juba.
We are not attacking anybody. The deployment of the army or whatever, I think the government should be asked about it, because we are a community and we are church goers. We love our God, we love our church. And therefore, we should be allowed to decide what is going wrong in our church, not the gun to decide.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UK's National Crime Agency has released a country-specific alert targeting corrupt practices connected to South Sudan. The Washington-based Sentry says the agency is targeting proceeds of major political and economic corruption in South Sudan. Megha Swamy, Deputy Director of Policy at the Sentry, explains the significance of the move as well as its potential impact.
What it does is it alerts companies to look out for the possibility that South Sudanese politically exposed persons, senior foreign public officials, and who may be engaged in corruption and human rights abuses in South Sudan, and also those who enable such activities, may be using the UK financial system to move and hide their proceeds of corruption or purchase real estate or other assets in the UK.
Could you talk about how you think this will impact matters in South Sudan, whether it's how, you know, people do business as usual or otherwise?
Yeah, well, first, the alert is also meant to allow for licit funds linked to South Sudan through the UK financial system. So the alert makes that clear. What it does try to stem the flow of is dirty money from South Sudan connected to high-level political public officials to go through the UK financial system. As you know, corruption is very much linked to conflict in South Sudan, very much a driver of conflict there, and illicit flows connected to this corruption are continuing to undermine peace and governance efforts. The UK ambassador to South Sudan, Ambassador Chris Trott, also mentioned that even though there is a peace agreement in place, the agreement is fragile and that there are few incentives for the elites and politically exposed persons to change their behavior and commit to long-term peace efforts. So this is in a way to tackle the money flows connected to corruption.
Megha, I just want to take a step back because sometimes it is hard to understand exactly how all of this works. So how does corruption in South Sudan find itself in the international finance markets and, you know, the role that the UK has in stopping corruption in South Sudan? Do you mind, just for listeners who, you know, may not be, you know, up to par on how all of this works, can you help us understand how something that happens in South Sudan can be picked up in the UK and flagged, you know, across, you know, the banking sectors there?
Money that is stolen from South Sudanese coffers that is meant for public good does not always remain in South Sudan. The people who steal this money need to launder it in order to use it and enjoy it. And to do that, they move it through the international financial system. So they use enablers, they use known methods to move this money outside the country, including in dollars and pounds. And that's why this UK alert is important.
And this is the first ever alert. that the UK's National Crime Agency has put out. How significant is it, apart from it being the first?
It is the first country-specific alert that is public for financial institutions. It is very significant because it essentially creates a new sort of law enforcement and foreign policy tool to tackle corruption and human rights abuses, money connected to corruption and human rights abuses from South Sudan. So in that sense, it's very significant and also really elevates the point that even though there is a government of national unity in place right now, that peace and long-term governance efforts are going to take real effort, continued effort. And the kleptocratic system in place in South Sudan right now that undermines long-term good governance efforts need to be tackled. So the UK has sent a very strong statement that it is looking at corruption and how it affects South Sudan's long-term peace efforts.
That was Mega Swamy, the Deputy Director of Policy at the Sentry, speaking to Ayen Deng Bior from Washington. A group calling itself the Indigenous Faithful at St. Teresa Catholic Church in Juba say they are not happy with the Vatican's decision to appoint Bishop Stephen Ameyu as the Archbishop of the Juba Catholic Diocese. Former Archbishop Paulino Lukudu Loro, who is now the Apostolic Administrator of the Catholic Church in Juba, is calling for calm after the South Sudan government deployed police and the military to quell the tension in the Catholic Church. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The main entrance to St. Teresa Catholic Cathedral was blocked by a joint force of police and military forces ahead of a planned news conference by the group opposing the new Archbishop's installation. Police spokesman Daniel Justin Bola says police arrested at least five youths from the group calling themselves the Indigenous Faithful, but later released the five.
Well, we are not sure of what will happen. That is why we kept our forces to be there to monitor the situation.
Daniel Wane Nyombe, the group's leader, says he does not understand why security forces were deployed at the church, denying his group the right to speak their minds.
We are not attacking anybody. The deployment of the army or whatever, I think the government should be asked about it. Because we are a community and we are church goers. We love our God, we love our church. And therefore we should be allowed to decide what is going wrong in our church, not the gun to decide. You might have seen, you might not have seen, yesterday some boys were beaten. Beaten for what? Don't we have right to talk about our church?
The so-called Indigenous Faithful say they will not allow the installation of the bishop appointed by Pope Francis to go on as planned. They accused Archbishop Stephen Ameyu of fathering biological children with seven different women, something they say is forbidden in the Catholic Church. On Friday, the Vatican sent Monsignor Visvaldas Kulbokas to the cathedral. Monsignor Kulbokas says Archbishop Ameyu has been cleared of all serious allegations and is expected to take his seat on March 22nd as the Archbishop of Juba Diocese.
This appointment by the Holy Father Francis was made and announced on 12 December 2018, which was then followed by an investigative process concerning some allegations that had been presented by some individuals. I am pleased now to announce to you that, after evaluating diligently that entire situation, Pope Francis has confirmed Most Reverend Stephen Ameyu Martin Mulla as the new Archbishop of Juba.
Nyombe said in a press statement any effort to move ahead with the installation of the new bishop will be a mistake, and the group is conducting its own investigation.
What we will definitely do is to close all our churches, including the Catholic. Whoever will attempt to open these churches by force will be the one starting the violence. We will surely respond with proportional means. God will then be the only judge from that day.
Paulino Lokudu Loro, Bishop Emeritus and the Apostolic Administrator of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, is calling for calm.
My dear people of God, in the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, I was saddened by the news of the incident that happened on Sunday, the 8th, March 2020, in St. Teresa's Cathedral Parish, Qatar, I have learned and seen that some faithful and some church personnel sustained some injuries. Thanks be to God that no life was lost. I'm unhappy as well to hear of violent threats and hostilities. I urge all the diocesan priests, the Diocese of Juba, religious and faithful, to refrain from violent activities.
Lokudo told journalists he does not oppose the decision of the Holy Father of appointing his successor because the Pope's decisions are final.
I mean, if there is anything wrong, I really cannot say yes, he is wrong. No. I would say, what do you say? As I hear from the others, okay. The others are done saying that he is wrong. But me and my obedience to the church, I don't have problem. As the bishop now, emeritus of Juba, I don't have a problem. The priests more or less should not have a problem. I think the issue is the faithful who feel that there is a problem.
Lokudo says although he supports the Pope's decision, he called into question certain procedures followed at the Vatican regarding the new archbishop.
This is not, I think, the issue of the Pope. It is our, from down here, the process that was conducted has not been transparent. And so I think the lady probably are believing that the Pope has been given wrong information. This is probably their point of view. The Pope has been given wrong information.
The indigenous faithful is threatening to lock the doors of all churches that carry out activities aimed at preparing for the installation of the new archbishop. But Lokudo warned the group they should refrain from making such threats. Bishop Stephen Ameyu Mola was announced by Pope Francis as the new Archbishop of Juba to replace Paulino Lokudo Loro on December 12th, a few months after Ameyu was appointed the Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Turit. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Hundreds of South Sudanese refugees are returning to Yei River County from neighboring Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo following the partial formation of the Government of National Unity. The returning refugees say they are glad to be back home, but say they don't have enough food or non-food items to restart their lives. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei Town.
Some of the returnees say they came back after hearing South Sudan's leaders agreed to work together to restore peace across the country. 62-year-old Kunin Evelyn returned from Rhino Camp in northern Uganda and resettled in Yei Town recently. Speaking in Arabic, Evelyn says she fled Yei Town at the height of the conflict in 2016. Evelyn is calling on the country's leaders to fully implement the peace deal so the suffering of South Sudanese refugees can end.
I am an only woman who have decided to return home together with my two children, and I have seen that Yei is getting better because of the peace agreement. And my call to the leaders is that they should not sleep but work towards peace so that many of us who were outside the country can return home.
Another returning refugee, David Sebit, says he is happy to be back in Yei after spending 2 years in Meru refugee camp in neighboring DR Congo. Speaking in his native Kakwa dialect, Sebit says living conditions in Meru were not good.
We were only given little money and not enough to sustain us, and currently we only need tents to put on the roofs of our building, and I am happy because our leaders are now united so that we develop our country.
Sebit says access to food still remains a challenge for his family. He is appealing to aid agencies to provide returnees with seeds so they can produce their own food. Messiah Ross, a mother of four, returned to Yei Town from a refugee camp in Uganda recently. Speaking in Arabic, Messiah says she too decided to return home because the unity government has been formed.
We have suffered in a foreign country, and now that there is a new government, we decided to come home so as to enjoy our freedoms in our own country. We want our leaders to love each other and implement the peace agreement so that our children can go to school and we live a better life.
Mabe Moses, coordinator for Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Yale River County, says hundreds of refugees are returning home these days. Mabe is calling on humanitarian organizations to provide 9 food items and farm equipment to returnees.
We have around 269 households who came from Uganda of recent. Individuals have 447 individuals who came from Uganda. Then from Congo, we have individuals who are 143. And even there are many who want to come, but they cannot afford because the transport itself is costly. There are no actors who have responded to help them. We really argue, and more especially actors, to at least help them if possible. People are preparing to cultivate. They need some agriculture tools so that they'll start life.
Dara Elisa, the executive director of a local humanitarian NGO mission to alleviate suffering in South Sudan or Mars, says although his organization lacks funding to provide food and tents to all returnees, efforts are underway to provide vegetable seeds and tools to over 12,000 vulnerable returnees and internally displaced persons.
We are planning to distribute emergency livelihood response to people who will benefit from vegetables, crop and fishing kits, and out of the total we are targeting returnees, IDPs, host communities and refugees, and the vegetables are quick maturing so that they have something to eat in this short run.
Elisa says the returnees should also be able to sell surplus crops to earn income that will meet the needs of their families. Many refugees fled the country during a resurgence in fighting in 2016. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei, Central Equatorial State.
We have a special announcement for our listeners in Juba. Effective Monday, March 16 at midday in Juba, VOA Africa will change its frequency from 93.5 FM to 93.6 FM. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a team from American Security arrive in Sudan. We will bring details right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best item you have ever purchased?
The best item I have ever purchased was my former car, Peugeot 406. 406. It was very good and I enjoyed the AC and it was affordable. So I really enjoyed it because it assisted me a lot.
The phone, and it's best for me because of its durability, and that's a Nokia phone that has lasted for so long.
My shoes. I love the shoes. I wasn't expecting it to last long, but I've been using it for long now, and it lasted than I expected. So I feel I bought it at a good price and lasted as I wanted.
Took out money to buy this dress, and the dress is really versatile. I can wear it anywhere, and it was a good purchase to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Sudanese Interior Ministry says a team from the American Federal Bureau of Investigations, or FBI, arrived in Khartoum Wednesday to investigate what the government calls an assassination attempt on Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. The transitional government says it will establish an internal security unit to fight terrorism and other related crimes. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudan's Minister of Information, Faisal Muhammad Saleh, has confirmed an FBI team of three security experts has arrived Khartoum to assist in the investigation. He also says security officers have arrested a number of national and foreign nationals in connection with the bomb attack on Hamdok's motorcade on Monday. Speaking to reporters in Arabic Monday night after the emergency meeting on the incident, Sudanese Interior Minister At-Tarifi Idris Dafalla said the government would seek the help of its friends to hunt down the perpetrators of the attack and bring them to justice. Government officials say they will establish a new security unit to run internal security affairs, pursue terrorist elements, and enact proactive measures to confront related crimes. Speaking in Arabic, Muhammad Al-Fakih Suleiman, a member of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, told reporters Tuesday evening that the new security unit will be empowered to monitor individuals suspected of belonging to terrorist organizations.
They shall closely and effectively monitor all individuals belonging to terrorist groups and prohibited organizations who could be working against the objectives of the revolution and take the necessary precautions against them.
Al-Fakih says officials at the meeting stressed the importance of cracking down on terrorist elements and taking proactive precautionary measures to prevent further attacks. General Awadanil Dahia, a retired Sudanese police officer, welcomes the Sudanese government's decision to seek support from friendly countries, saying Sudan is not well equipped for such probes.
That something will help, actually, for the sake of widening also the knowledge of our security, national security forces. So I believe it's something good.
Dahia says dealing with attacks like the one of Hamdok's motorcade required experience, adding the U.S. security forces, which use modern technology to deal with such incidents, will play a great role in finding the perpetrators. He also hailed the government for creating an anti-terrorism unit under the Ministry of Interior.
I believe that is something good because, first of all, the coordination will be better than what it is now. The coordination is not at the best level, actually. So putting it under one ministry, that will be better.
Sudan's Attorney General Tajasir Al-Hibir said yesterday that a combined team of police, public prosecutors, and national intelligence officers are investigating the incident. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Kenya for some updates. Corona is leading to a rising tide of anti-Chinese sentiment globally, and experts say similar sentiments being witnessed in Africa aren't unique. VOA Swahili spoke to some residents in Kenya and looked at the social impact of the virus. VOA Salim Solomon has this report.
A video being shared widely on social media shows angry crowd threatening two people of Asian descent about the coronavirus.
Your corona!
Reportedly recorded in Kenya, a man in the crowd shouts at the frightened couple, "You are corona." The Asian man responds,
"Don't have corona, you know!"
As the coronavirus spreads across continents, it's also spreading fear. In many parts of the world, including Africa, xenophobia, and more specifically, Sinophobia, the fear of Chinese people, is on the rise. An estimated 1 million Chinese live and work in Africa. Many now face added scrutiny or outright discrimination. In interviews on the streets of Nairobi, VOA found growing unease about Chinese immigrants.
When I see a Chinese, I get scared because I don't know if they are from China or if they were in Kenya before the virus outbreak. You know how our system is corrupt? You never know. So that's why when I see a Chinese, I get a little bit scared.
Another resident of Nairobi urged caution.
Okay, I don't think we should discriminate them per se. But what my take is that the government should just check and make sure that the people who are coming inside the country, they are screened and all the right procedures are followed, because we also do business with them and they also employ us and they are also supporting the economy in certain ways.
Yung Jung Park, a professor at Johns Hopkins University and an associate director at the China-Africa Research Institute, said anti-Chinese sentiment is not new in Africa.
I would say that across the continent, there have been periodic kind of outbursts of what looks to be anti-Chinese sentiment.
Solomon Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Pressure is mounting on Malawi's government to release three activists detained this week for planning to hold protests aimed at shutting down presidential residences. Local and international rights groups have urged their release, describing the detention as a crackdown ahead of court-ordered rerun elections. Lamek Maseno reports from Blantyre.
Police arrested two members of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, Vice Chairperson Gift Trapens and member McDonald Sembeleka on Sunday, after they said they would organize protests to shut down the five official presidential residences. Their aim was to pressure President Peter Mutharika to sign electoral reforms bills that will pave way for the fresh elections after Malawi's Constitutional Court nullified last May's polls. The court cited massive irregularities in the vote, which saw Mutharika re-elected. The electoral bills propose a date for fresh elections and procedures to follow in case of runoffs. HRDC chairperson Timothy Ntambo surrendered to police Tuesday. Police say Ntambo, Trapens, and Sembeleka will face charges of inciting people to close state residences under Section 124 of the Penal Code. But Amnesty International says the arrests are a government attempt to crack down on dissenting views. The International Human Rights Body has asked Malawi authorities to immediately and unconditionally release the detained activists. Wangai Chikwanda is Amnesty International's campaigner for Southern Africa.
The activists simply stated their intention, which is allowed under freedom of expression. The crime has not been committed. So are you arresting people before the crime has been committed? However, the police should have simply said that according to our laws, this is what the Penal Code says in relation to what has been proposed. It does not warrant an arrest.
The arrests were made just hours after Mutharika denounced the planned protests at a Blantyre political rally and ordered security to stop the group. Chikwanda said in a WhatsApp interview that such statements put lives of activists at risk.
We all know that Timothy narrowly escaped petrol bomb attacks the last time at his home. His car was torched the last time. So these are the kind of actions that we end up seeing by those who are overzealous. And you put activists' lives at risk by such threats.
Mark Bottoman is the government spokesperson. He says those condemning the government are ignorant of the laws of Malawi.
I think you understand that Amnesty International does not live in Malawi. They may have connections in Malawi, they may be fed with information from here, but I think the context of the matter is these people have been arrested because they are suspected to have committed a crime. And in our country, whether you are a human rights defender or you, anyone else, including myself as a minister, if I break the law, the long arm of law can catch up with me.
On Wednesday, a court in Lilongwe denied bail to the three human rights activists. Meanwhile, opposition Malawi Congress Party has called for a nationwide demonstration Thursday, pushing for the release of the activists and also to push Mutharika to sign the electoral reforms bills. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
We have a special announcement. Effective Monday, March 16, at 12 midday in Juba, VOA Africa will change its frequency from 93.5 FM to 93.6 FM. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the Kang JJ singing a peace song in his native Nuer language. We've been listening to Kang JJ with a peace song in his native language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.